show. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. My name is Adam. I am your host. On today's episode, we've got four main topics we're going to talk about. We got a tennis, we got baseball, football, and sort of a miscellaneous topic that I'm going to relate to sports cards. You'll kind of see a little bit along the way. Also, we're sponsored by Prize Picks. I don't know exactly what to call it here, but Prize Picks, we have the affiliate link in the comments. So check that out. I'll be talking about what happened last week and then this upcoming week for Prize Picks later on in the episode. But here we are. So we got the first topic. I've been testing to see because the YouTube videos, I need to make sure that the YouTube videos are good here. Let me just, in this live stream, I'm not 100% sure. I was thinking about it, and maybe someone can leave it in the comments if they're watching the live stream. I was thinking about, like, if I want to keep doing the live stream, or if this should maybe just be, this isn't what I wanted to do. Or if this should just be like a show that goes on YouTube that all the... Nope, not studios. Sorry, again. Oh my god. Live streaming. I'm trying to make sure that... Okay, here we go. So, Carlos Alcaraz is a tennis player from Spain. He is, you know, for all accounts right now, the best player in the world. He just won the US Open. Kind of interesting, a little bit of a controversy, kind of not a controversy. He has had the only licensed cards that he has right now are going to be coming through NetPros, and which is actually, they just came out with the product. They just came out with the cards. So like, if you go and search, make sure, if you're looking for any of his cards, make sure you're looking for the NetPros official set. The design kind of looks like last year's Bowman a little bit, which is interesting. I noticed there was actually a couple designs that were very similar to other card designs that have been coming out. Like, I think some of the RPAs that were coming out with him, which I guess they'd be rookie patch autograph, but either way. So the designs look very similar, but there was a little bit of a controversy when it came to the cards that were on eBay, because there were a lot of cards that people were putting up. They were just like the custom cards, which I thought was kind of interesting because, like, you know, you do see that typically on eBay every now and then. Like, you might see it with, like, you were seeing it with players in college before they started doing the NIL deals. But, like, there were, like, a ton of his cards on eBay that were just, like, custom cards. So now NetPros comes out with this product. I'm a big fan of, you know, tennis in general. I think tennis cards, I think, you know, we've seen over the past few, like, I guess month or so, I mean, there's been like a lot of news that tennis has been in. When they have these big tournaments, you are typically going to see more tennis in the news, obviously. And when you have a player like Serena Williams retiring, or now Roger Federer is also announcing he's going to be retiring after an upcoming tournament that he's going to be in, you are obviously going to see that see tennis more in the news in general. I do think more alternative sports are becoming more popular within the United States as well. If you look at some of the WNBA numbers, like the ratings, the WNBA ratings have been extremely high compared to other years. Like, I think most of the games that they're playing in are breaking the records for these games. Now, also, I do also want to point out, like, these games, sure, they've been on ESPN, but, you know, I think ESPN over the past couple of years has started to focus more on trying to promote that product a little bit more, to be completely honest. So, you know, like tennis, WNBA, I think, is another kind of alternative. I would say tennis is probably more popular globally than the WNBA. I mean, that seems kind of obvious. A lot of the top players are not from the United States. Like, for example, like Carlos, he's from Spain and he's only 19. So I think I have two sort of things here. I think it's fun to get into prospecting, obviously, but if you've watched any of my other videos, you've heard me talk about prospecting and how dangerous it can be and how you need to be careful if you're prospecting. This is another pretty decent example. I mean, they came out with his cards, you know, as he was sort of on the trajectory up. Like, he, over this past year, he's really climbed up the rankings, and I think he's at number one now. So first teenager to be number one. I mean, I think this is a pretty good example of, like, where if you want to buy his cards, maybe wait a little bit until the I would say wait until some of the major tournaments are over, because like this U.S. Open, obviously, if you win the U.S. Open, that means, you know, you're going to be in the news. That means his cards are probably going to be more popular. And if you're NetPros, honestly, it was a perfectly timed release of the product, not really to their doing, I guess. You know, they probably looked at it and said, we want to come out with the product around the U.S. Open. But, like, they didn't really expect that he was going to win the U.S. Open. Obviously, if you're looking at this tweet here, first teenager to win any major title since Rafael Nadal in 2005. So, like, if you're NetPros and you're coming out with this new product, like I said, perfectly timed. NetPros is also the company that made the 2003 NetPros set, which we talked a little bit about in a previous YouTube video, podcast, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. We talked about it previously because it has the Serena Williams. It also has the Roger Federer and the Rafael Nadal rookie cards. You can probably find older. For Serena, you specifically can find a 1999 Sports Illustrated for Kids, which many people consider the first rookie card. But if you're looking at cards that are the first card within a product, then the 2003 NetPros set is going to be that product you want to look at. I was actually very surprised when I was looking into the sealed boxes. You can find them for a pretty decent price. Like, you know, if you're comparing the players that are in that box to other sports, it would basically be like if, and I think I use this on Twitter, it would basically be like if Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Peyton Manning all were rookies within one product, were getting their first cards. Obviously, from different years, it's a little bit different, but I think the example kind of holds there. Like, you have three of the best tennis players of all time all getting their first rookie cards within one product. And it was one of the first tennis products, I believe, within the United States that was, like, fully licensed. There were some other tennis stuff that kind of came out throughout. But like I said, so NetPros 2003, they also come out with this card. I think some of them are numbered. I'm not 100% sure if all the base cards are numbered, but I know some, there is a set of them that's numbered to 2000. But yeah, the card itself, I would be careful, especially with the, you know, this is another example of, like, when a product first comes out, it's going to be more expensive because people want the first card. Like, I pull my hair out not being able to figure out why people continuously buy cards right when they come out, because it's over time, it's clearly shown almost 100% of the time from the release date to even 6 months later, the price of the card or the price of the product has gone down. And I really just, honestly just think I have to chalk it up to, like, people don't care. Like, there's just people out there that don't care about what the price is. You know, they don't care that hypothetically they spent $100 on a card when 6 months later, that's a $10 card, or, you know, a $20 card, or whatever the price of the card ends up being. There's just people that don't really care about that fact of the card and the price of it going down after a certain amount of time. I don't know exactly why people wouldn't really care, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if you are really not looking at pricing, you know, it could be somebody, like, I think there's so many groups of people within sports cards that I don't think people realize. Like, there's probably whole groups of people who really aren't looking at, you know, any type of historical data, or, you know, they're not on social media, or they're not, which at this point, like, if you're buying stuff on the internet, there's probably a decent chance you're on social media. But like I said, I'll say that there's probably a decent group of, there's a group of people probably that aren't on social media, aren't looking at this historical data. So they don't even know maybe that the cards are going down in price. Like, and there also could just be people who are just buying the card because they want to buy the card and they're just never going to plan to sell it. So they don't really care that they spent, you know, whatever, $7,500 on the card if they know they're never going to sell it. Now, if the card's worth $20, you could then buy five of them. So that would make sense to me why you wouldn't want to buy the card right away. But at the same time, some people just want the card first. You're probably also going to see people that want to get it graded first. Now, I think that's a completely different conversation than the kind of what I was just talking about. But that price does end up coming down. I think I would be interested to see sort of somebody's journey, if that's what they're doing when they're flipping, like grading and flipping, if they're buying the card when it first comes out, grading it, you know, spending the $200-$300 whatever on grading and then selling it. Like the Mac Jones, for example, the Mac Jones Donruss card, when that product first came out, the PSA 10 that was graded first, I believe the first PSA 10 sold for like $2,000 or $1,500 or something along those lines, which now obviously you could probably find that for, I mean, Mac Jones hasn't had a, which he's only played the one season, only had one game so far, but I would imagine his prices have come down a little bit. You know, and it's sort of maybe it's an overreaction to week one. Maybe it's an overreaction to sort of the preseason and sort of how the coaching, obviously being a Patriots fan, I'm sort of maybe in it a little bit more. So I'm noticing some of the specific things within Mac Jones and why maybe his cards are going down. But either way, I think what you'll find is like that card, then you could probably find that for like a couple $100 right now, like the PSA 10. And I believe it was one of the most, I think I saw, so PSA comes out with their data, which I love. They come out with a lot of their grading data, and it said that the Mac Jones was like in the top five of total number of graded cards of a specific card since the end of the 2021 football season, which, you know, that's definitely pretty crazy. I mean, you know, I don't know, maybe I almost think that maybe that is going to affect the prices of Donruss cards in the future. Like, because for a while, Donruss was the only product that was coming out. So you were seeing pretty significant, changes, or you were seeing pretty significant price on some of those cards because there just weren't any other cards out. Same way, it could be the same thing with these cards, with the NetPros cards. It's probably, for at least for now, it's his only licensed card that he has, which, like I said, if it's not a NetPros licensed card, I would not be buying it on eBay, no matter what it is. He has RPAs, he has the base cards. So if you're looking into his cards, there's only one and it was recently released. So there's a decent chance you're probably going to be paying more for that card right now than if you're just waiting, you know, maybe even 3 to 4 weeks, you know, even a month, or look into it. Like if you look at whatever the next tournament is, which I'm not 100% sure with what the next tournament is, if you're looking at whatever that is, look like a few weeks before that tournament, before the news kind of starts churning up again, because with him being the number one player in the world, I think this means that he's going to get more eyeballs on him. And does that affect his card prices? I'd say probably long-term if he turns out to be like a, you know, a Nadal or a Federer or a Djokovic, but like he's only 19. So like I've always said about prospects, if you're looking to buy into him, just be careful because you never really know how these players are going to turn out. All right. See if we got any comments. No comments yet. Let's jump into the next topic here. We're going to talk about Topps Chrome. So Topps Chrome Baseball recently released, and you're going to see that Topps Chrome, I'm going to retry it here. So Topps Chrome recently released. I think one of the things about Topps Chrome that I find the most interesting is that it should be a product that's part of a larger campaign for Topps, in my opinion. I think I've talked about this on previous videos where I think that Topps needs to reduce the amount of Topps flagship product that they come out with, and they need to start coming out with more singular releases where there is like, I think I said this when I was talking about the actual new Topps 2023 design. I think that they should do series one and series two, where series one comes out at the beginning of the season. It has all the players who are going to be on that roster, who are definitely starting the year on the roster, maybe. And then the players from last season who didn't make it into what will be this concept series two. And then series two at the end of the season, which will include all the players that weren't in series one that were rookies that did make the deadline for series two. I think Topps Chrome, you could fit in there. And I know they do Topps Chrome and Topps Chrome Update, sort of the same thing. I wish they would just come out with one version of it. And then I wish that they would combine some of the other products. I think Topps Finest would sort of fall into that category of a singular product that I would want. But in the past, I've talked about Gypsy Queen and Allen and Ginter. I think that they could figure out a way to combine those products. I think Heritage is maybe a borderline one that I think you could do. You could do a singular release, but at the same token, I think it should be a later on in the year type of situation where later on in the year, they can include all the rookies in Topps Heritage, because I think that's one of the reasons why they do sort of the Heritage and Heritage High Number. They come out with Heritage at the beginning of the year and then Heritage High Number later on in the year, which Heritage High Number has, I think, Like it's the same thing. It's basically the up top update of Heritage, because it's just they continue the checklist and they add more players to it. And this tweet I thought was very interesting. It was basically breaking down the numbers and the increases of how many hobby boxes. I looked into trying to figure out where exactly he was getting the numbers from. I'm guessing it just has to be from there must be some sort of parallel that's hobby exclusive and there's odds. So that's where I would imagine he's getting the numbers from. I'm not 100% sure. So I think that, you know, this data, it makes sense. But like I said, I think the data is coming from a specific parallel in the odds that the parallel is getting pulled from a pack. That's where I would imagine this data is coming from. So 2018, 48K hobby boxes, 2019, I'm not actually going to go through all of them just because, you know, you can read the numbers here, but it's a 20% increase from last year, which it would be almost double the amount from 2018 in terms of how many hobby boxes there are for Topps Chrome. It's not really surprising. I think this is sort of the type of thing where, you know, I don't necessarily wish that there were less hobby boxes, like, because in my theory, honestly, that would just mean that there would be more hobby boxes, which would then increase the supply that there are cards within the product. I think I saw Slapsox made a post about it and said that there are more veteran autos on this checklist than there were in previous years as well. So, I mean, that could be one of the reasons why we're seeing so many more hobby boxes. Like, maybe they're getting more autographs for this product. I don't know where or how they can make Topps Chrome more popular. I think if I'm ranking baseball cards, I think the Topps Chrome like autograph should probably be in the conversation for top autograph card you want to get if you're looking for a rookie. I think if you're ranking regular base cards, Bowman Chrome's first. I think then there's a conversation for the Topps Chrome versus the regular flagship. I don't know. Like, I think it's an interesting thing with baseball because it's flip-flopped, to be completely honest. It's flip-flopped between Topps Chrome and the regular flagship, between which one is the more popular card over the past few years. Bowman Chrome has kind of always been in that, it has always sort of been number one. But I think Topps Chrome, I think I have a tweet out now, or I'm going to be putting it out, basically just talking about like how I think Topps needs to figure out a way to brand the releases of these big products a little bit better. I think one thing that they do really well for the flagship release is they do the rip party, which I think is really great. They obviously can't really do that with Topps Chrome, to be honest, because there's probably less of the product itself. But I like Topps Chrome. Topps Finest is another one that I think is a kind of a nostalgic product that I really like for me, to be completely honest. But I think with Topps Chrome, I think Topps also this year has done a little bit better marketing than most years. Now, that could obviously be Fanatics taking over. I'm not 100% sure if Fanatics, I would imagine they probably brought people in to do the marketing, or at least they combined some of the, you know, marketing groups, I would imagine. I can't imagine that Topps or Fanatics buys Topps and they don't try and bring in any of their marketing. But I think that they probably brought in a few people. So the marketing you're seeing with Topps this year, I think, has gotten a lot better. I think that they, you know, honestly, in the past, we've seen like one tweet about something or like one Instagram post. And I have seen multiple kind of posts hyping this release up. I do think that they need to figure out a way to hype up the release even more, to be completely honest. Like, I think some sort of, you know, not the rip party, obviously, but something like that where, I don't know, like, or they do some sort of release during All-Star weekend. Like, I feel like they need to integrate sort of into baseball a little bit more, where they are doing some of the videos where some of the marketing people are doing videos with baseball players and MLB pros. Like, they are doing those videos, but I think at the same time, they need to figure out a way to integrate more into the cards, because I think when it comes to sports cards, in my opinion, I could be off base with this, but when people talk about sports cards, for the most part, people are talking about baseball cards, or they think about baseball cards first. Like, sure, you know, if you're getting into basketball or football, maybe it is a little bit different. But I think when people say sports cards, for the most part, people are really looking at it and saying, well, so baseball cards. And same with when you think of baseball, I feel like people associate that with cards pretty often, to be completely honest. And it feels like it's almost one of the sports that is more, not necessarily reliant, I don't think that's the word I'm looking for, but it's more tied to cards, and the sport are kind of tied together pretty well, I think. And it's probably a sport where it's the most tied together. So I think in the future, I would like to see each product have a sort of a different type of marketing to it. Like, you know, I almost think that Topps should do their marketing similar to like how other companies do like different seasons, like where they change their profile picture or they, you know, they change the look. Like I think football or sports teams do this as well. Like throughout the year, like they'll change kind of their whole sort of marketing. They'll change sort of their whole social media presence based on sort of what's going on that during that time period. I think it would be a good idea if Topps, you know, if somehow, you know, they could chromify or whatever, I don't think that's a word, but if they chromified their social media platforms and hyped up this Topps Chrome release a little bit more, like I would like to see months of hype behind the Topps Chrome release rather than just maybe a week or two, which when you're releasing so many products, it is probably pretty hard to do something like that, to be honest. But at the same time, like this is where maybe less product coming out and more strategy around the more strategy around the release of the products, and not just like, you know, you release whatever product and it comes out, and then next thing, you know, and then the next week there's another product comes out, and that's sort of what it almost has been like. But I would like to see Topps Chrome and maybe Flagship and maybe Topps Finest and maybe Topps Heritage. I would like them to figure out what their top maybe 5 to 6 products are and just brand their social media or brand it a little bit differently, because I just think it should be more important for it. They should try and, or it could be like how WWE does their pay-per-views. I think if somehow they could get someone from social at WWE to either advise them or consult with them, I think that would be a good example. Cause if you look at WWE, they have a pay-per-view every month. It's kind of similar to how Topps has cards coming out every month. So I think you could look at it that way and maybe figure out a way to release products in a way that you're hyping up the product instead of sort of just doing release after release after release. All right. Now we're going to get into Prize Picks. Prize Picks, it's daily fantasy and props put together. It's a ton of fun. Last week, 1-1 on my picks, basically 5-6 on the total picks. The only one that didn't win was the intercept, Marcus Mariota interception, which I watched the game on TV, and literally Marcus Mariota threw a pass and the defender went through his hands. So we missed out on being 2-0. Basically just on a missed catch. Like, so that was unfortunate. But this week, again, we're going with the interceptions. We've got Baker Mayfield, Mitch Trubisky, Tua, all getting more than one interceptions. And then this week, I tried to switch it up a little bit. I used Number Fire for my, you know, projections. And a lot of the numbers that were in Prize Picks compared to what were projected were a lot higher for Number Fire. So that's why I went with some of the passing or receiving yards for a couple of receivers throughout the year. I may or may not put in a couple more. One thing I would definitely suggest is watching and looking out for Prize Picks Twitter, because they put out a ton of promotions on there. So I think like on Fridays they do something like Flex Friday, where you can, like you said, you can do a flex play rather than a power play, which power play, you have to get all of your picks correct to win the lineup. Flex play, you only have to get a certain amount. So I think I think they increase the amount if you get all of them right using a flex play. So that's, you know, Prize Picks. If you want to check them out, go to the description or go to the comment that I have in there with my link. You'll help out the show. Sign up. You get 100% bonus up to $100. Go check that out. Put in a lineup for this Sunday. It's a ton of fun. All right. And so we're going to get into the third topic here. So again, like I've talked. Eric Whiteback is a guy that I've talked about in a previous video. I mean, I think he's one of the best. I think he's one of the best Twitter accounts for cards because he just puts out a ton of great data in this. I put out similar data like a while ago when I was kind of more into looking into more specific data. And he put this tweet out, which is an absolute fire tweet. Trevor Lawrence now has 1,136 different one-of-one rookie cards where Tom Brady only had six. I think that, you know, there's two conversations that I'm having here. So like Trevor Lawrence, obviously being the first pick, I think maybe the better comparison would be to look at who the highest pick was in 2000, which now that I'm saying it out loud, I didn't do that and I probably should have, but either way. So I think there's probably more one of ones of whoever was a higher pick. Tom Brady was like one of the last guys in the whole draft to get picked. So like, obviously he's not going to have as many one of ones. He really doesn't have that many cards in general. It's actually sort of surprising that he even has a contender's autograph or a Bowman Chrome. But I think what you have here is obviously we've seen such a increase in production. Obviously, number of products has gone up significantly. Parallels gone up significantly. And I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. Like, I'm sure you could probably go to this tweet or you could go on Twitter and see people complaining about, how this is terrible and how it's ruining the hobby and how all of these parallels and all of these one-of-ones devalues the cards. And I think to some extent they may be correct. But I just think it more comes to a point where there's just more opportunity. I think that's kind of how I look at it. If you're flipping cards or if you're buying and selling right away, I just think that there's more opportunity. I think, I don't know 100% whether people who are strictly collectors like that there's more one-of-ones or if they wish that there were less. I'd say there's probably two. There's probably the people who like collecting the one-of-ones and they wish there was less so that way they wouldn't have to, choose sort of which card. They would just be able to get the one-of-one. And then there's probably also people who just look at it and say, well, there's so many one-of-ones, they're all going to be a little bit cheaper now, which is great. I think down the road, like you could even look back at some old products or that have come out throughout the years. And if you want to find a player who, isn't Trevor Lawrence, for example, you're probably going to be able to find a ton of those cards for pretty cheap. I think Trevor Lawrence is, number one pick. Mac Jones, I mean, all those quarterbacks have played fine from last year. Zach Wilson really he's injured, so he hasn't played yet this year. And depending on when this video comes out, it's probably past week two. So like, there's going to be more numbers that have come out. But just looking at like the initial sort of initial after 1 year, I think all of them have been fine. Have they lived up to their potential? Probably not. Will some of them fall off? Probably. I mean, I just think that that's sort of how it goes. One of the things that I think I need to do a little bit more research on this specifically, but if anybody has this data and wants to leave it in the comments, I'd be interested to see like what the percentage of quarterbacks who are playing in the NFL and where their rounds were. Because I think, there was the five quarterbacks that went in last year's draft. But I would be interested to see like what percentage of first round quarterbacks end up being busts or like is like, randomly is like the third round the best round for quarterbacks to go in. But I think when it comes to cards, I think this, 1,136, that's obviously super high. I think it kind of comes with the conversation of like, there are going to be way more inserts as well. Like, I would be interested to know, I would be interested to see what this number would be if it was just the base cards coming out of products and not including inserts. Because if you take out the inserts, if each product there's one of one base card of that insert or of that card, I think that obviously is going to drop the number pretty significantly. I've talked about this in the past as well. I don't love that they have multiple different types of one of ones. Like I know with contenders in 2018, there was a variation image, which I think they do the variation every year, but they had a image variation to Josh Allen, is why I'm using this as an example. But they had the one of one Josh Allen, which sold on all. And a couple weeks before that, the one-of-one image variation was pulled. So I thought those were the same cards. And I actually made a video where I had to take the video down, basically, because I made it for collectible. and because I didn't realize that the cards were different. I reworded it and it wasn't really that big of a deal. But I think I don't love that the one of ones that they have image variations with one of ones. And I think another conversation that I would like to see, and I don't know if it'll ever happen, but I think that all base cards should be either numbered or they should have a print run on the base card. I don't know if they would be able to, I don't think they would ever be able to serial number every single base card. Like if we're talking like Topps Chrome, or if we're talking Topps, or if we're talking for football Prism or Donruss or Optic, they obviously wouldn't be able to, they wouldn't be able to serial number probably every single card. That's kind of what you see in like higher end products, but I'm talking base products. I think it would help the market, because it would, card companies would never do this, because then they would be showing their hand on how many, what their print runs are, you know, on all their cards. But I think it would help the market if we knew how many of these cards there were. I think one thing you saw, you know, with the Mac Jones card, for example, you know, the Donruss, there's so many of those graded. And there were so many that got graded so quickly. It was in like the top five, I think, for PSA. They were talking about how cards that were graded after last season, the Mac Jones Donruss was in that top conversation there of like, I think it was in the top five of total graded. But like if, you know, and I think when it comes to maybe pricing, I don't know, maybe it's like they come out with a product itself that has all the base cards numbered. I don't know how they get that into the kind of the cycle of like products that everyone's really excited for, but I would like to see the print run at least somewhere. Like even if it's not on the card, even if they were to on the box or something, like even, or, you know, I don't know, this would be kind of crazy. Maybe they come out with a product and the product is actually the number of how many base cards there are. Like I said, I'm just kind of spitballing here of sort of the concept that I would like to see, but I think the numbering of all the base cards would help, because it would help the market maybe more than collectors, I guess, necessarily, because then each year you're obviously going to see more and more of that specific product. But I think it would be kind of cool if they, you know, maybe even if Topps were to say like, we're not going to increase print runs for 2 years, or we're not going to increase the number of cards that we're coming out with for however many years. I think that would be another interesting thing too. I think with this comparison, I do think that there's just more opportunity for people to flip these cards. With Trevor Lawrence, I think it's or with any of these rookie quarterbacks, because I think you're kind of looking at them all being sort of similarly priced. If there's a good opportunity for people to flip these cards, then I think that's good. But also at the same time, it probably makes the cards a little bit cheaper. So if you don't want to flip, you could buy the cards and you don't have to really worry about what the price is. Like, and now at this point too, because basically all the products, I think Donruss Elite is the first product that's the new product for the rookies, with like Kenny Pickett and all the rookies from this year. So I'm pretty sure that product came out like last week, or it has come out already. So now you're going to see the end of the Trevor Lawrence, Mac Jones products, and more of the Kenny Pickett products coming out. But I think what you'll see is, because there's more cards, I think it's going to lead to more people kind of getting involved, I think, in my opinion. Maybe not, but like, I think it's going to get more people involved, because they're going to say, hey, there's a Trevor Lawrence one of one. This one of one Trevor Lawrence is only a couple $100, or it's only like $50, or whatever it ends up being, and you get the one of one. I think that's more exciting for people who are looking to buy these cards than like, you know, if there's, I think Brady is another kind of extreme example, but like with Brady, there's only 6 one of ones. So like all those one of ones are going to be thousands and thousands of dollars. So it's going to be harder to obtain, where maybe these one of ones excites collectors a little bit more because there are so many of them. All right. Last topic. We're going to go kind of quick through this one. I don't think it's not really sports cards. It's more of a miscellaneous topic. So Disney and ESPN are reportedly trying to build their own sports betting app. I think I've watched the sports betting industry grow over the past few years, and I think sports cards are going to be very similar to that industry when it comes to media. At least I hope so. I mean, maybe this is wishful thinking, and maybe I'm a little bit biased because I'm a, you know, media person within sports cards, but you've seen what ESPN has done with their sports betting. They've added shows, they've added personalities that are sports betting. Now, you could argue that the shows that ESPN puts out on sports betting aren't great. The people on the shows maybe don't really actually, they don't actually really know what's going on, or they don't know kind of the lingo or the topics or anything. But I think what ESPN has shown that they're willing to do, and I mean, it's very interesting how the shift with sports betting, because I think what you saw maybe five, 10 years ago, you saw it really was like sort of like a behind the scenes sort of thing where, you know, there would be a clip of some announcer talking about it and it would go viral because it's like no one's talking about the spreads of the games. But now it's like every announcer almost is making comments about the spreads or the over-unders of these games. So obviously ESPN, being the biggest sports network, they want to get involved in this. I do think it's interesting, you know, Disney being involved too. So it's like, it's not just ESPN, it's ESPN, ABC, Disney, kind of, because they're all owned by, I think Disney is the parent company, I'm pretty sure. So they're all going to be owned by that. But what I think is that sports cards are going to maybe follow a pretty similar trajectory when it comes to a media perspective. I think right now we're sort of in an early phase of cards. Like the best comparison that I'd use, to be completely honest, is that the best comparison I've used for sports cards is like that we are when fantasy sports originally went online. So when fantasy sports first came out, it was all pen and paper. You know, you would track all your stats. You'd send them to the league commissioner, whatever you would do, your process was. And then fantasy sports went online, and that completely changed the game. That's sort of where I think sports cards are right now. You know, with breaks, with online retail, with all that kind of stuff, with eBay, with Vault, with all that kind of stuff. It used to just be you would have to go to a show to, you know, eBay's only been around for like 20 years. So like if you wanted to buy and sell sports cards, you know, 15 years ago, you'd have to go to a show or you'd have to go to your local card store. You would have to trust those people too. That's kind of the other thing that I think is big about what a good thing that's happened now that sports cards has gone more online is that there's more data behind everything, and you can't really trick anybody nowadays, to be completely honest. Like you can if you're good at it, unfortunately, but for the most part you can't really trick anybody. So like with sports betting, it's been over the past few years that we've seen kind of a rise, probably a quicker rise than fantasy sports in general, but like I think the fringe niches, I don't think that's exactly right, but like the fringe things that people are interested in, sports betting, sports cards, anime, cartoons, you know, I just think video games is another perfect example. All of these industries, because of the internet, are starting to grow a lot more quickly. And I think overall what's going on with that is because there's more people talking about it, and you can find more people talking about it. Like I said, if you were good to go back 10, 15, 20 years ago, if you want to talk to someone about sports cards, it would be pretty hard. But like nowadays you can go to Twitter, you can go to Instagram, you can go to TikTok, you can go to YouTube, you can go anywhere and you can find people talking about sports cards. Sports betting, same thing. It's exactly the same thing. I mean, you're seeing a rise in people, you know, the people on TikTok, the people on Twitter that are giving out their picks. And I think that, like I said, sports cards, I think, is in a very similar trajectory. Do I think it's the next 5-10 years we would see, you know, ESPN come out with a show about sports cards? You know, maybe it's like a weekly thing. Maybe it's like an ESPN, the Ocho type of thing where they come out and they talk about sports cards. Who really knows? But I think we're still in such an early stage with sports cards when it comes to where we've come from, that I think, you know, you see Disney and ESPN getting a lot more into sports betting, not just talking about on the air. They're trying to build their own sports betting app. I think that's a good thing. And that's sort of how I would relate it to sports cards when it comes to where I see the industry going over the next 5-10, maybe the next few decades. And that's the show, everybody. Well, back here, make sure, like I said, you use the link I put in the comments. You're looking to get into Prize Picks. I want to thank everybody for watching. If you're listening on the podcast, thank you very much. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you as well. Make sure you like and subscribe. Thank you, everybody, and I will see you in the next one.